Welcome to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. While mostly known for our German heritage, Cincinnati has a long history of Irish influence through the generations. Cincinnati's Irish heritage coming up in about 25 minutes here on Cincinnati Edition. But first, the infant mortality rates in our community are almost double those in the rest of the nation. On average, one baby dies every 3 days in this area. Joining me in the studio to explore why the rates are so high and what can be done to reduce infant mortality are Dr. Elizabeth Kelly, Director of Maternal and Infant Health at the Cincinnati Health Department and Associate Professor of Clinical Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Ryan Adcock, Executive Director of Cradle Cincinnati, and Dr. James Greenberg, Co-Director of the Perinatal Institute and Professor of the UC Department of Pediatrics. Both Dr. Greenberg and Dr. Kelly are co-founders of Cradle Cincinnati. If you have a question or a comment to add to this discussion, feel free to call 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, post on Facebook, or tweet us. And I want to thank you all for being here today.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I will put this out as a general, and we'll see who hops in first. When did the infant mortality rate become such an issue and a problem here in the Cincinnati area? When was it recognized as being out of the ordinary?
We've had a high rate for quite a few years. We don't set a specific date on it, but it's been it was certainly recognized as a problem in the 90s in Cincinnati. It was recognized in the early 2000s. It's a hard issue to work on and to fix, and so it's been a problem for a long time. Recent data tells us that Hamilton County is the fifth worst in the country.
Amazing numbers when you begin to dig deeper into what's happening around here. Now, infant mortality is defined as the death of an infant before his or her first birthday. What are the primary causes of infant mortality?
So about 70% of our infant deaths this past year were babies that were born premature. That's not necessarily the only risk factor that they had. But so when you think about infant mortality, you want to think about prematurity. And that gets you thinking about women's health and pregnancy health beyond just infant health. And then when we're not talking about prematurity, the other thing we talk a lot about is safe sleep. So we have, depending on the year, 16, 17, or 18 babies die every year just from being put down to sleep unsafely, and we can talk more about what that means.
So the issue is both a women's health issue and a social issue, if you look at it, because prematurity is most often in those that are poor and lack the proper prenatal care or any of the prenatal experiences. So it is both health and social that makes it very difficult to attack.
Absolutely. And we have to address it not only through medical means, but also by really reaching out to the community. And Cradle Cincinnati is a partnership between a lot of entities here in town. And that includes the maternity hospitals here in town. But it also includes folks like Center for Closing the Health Gap and the public health departments who really are experts in reaching out to the community.
Now, why do certain areas have higher rates than others? I mean, this is difficult. I was noticing in the numbers that in Kenton County and Campbell County, rates are nearly double the national. But in Boone County, they're roughly the same as the national average. How do these geographical and racial and economic disparities contribute to this issue?
Well, I guess I'll start with my perspectives on that, Mark. I think, the simple perspective is that it's really complicated.
Yes, it is.
And some of the variation that you mentioned is due to small numbers. Even though this is a big problem, the numbers are still small and account for a certain amount of variation. But, in general, as you pointed out, elevated infant mortality is associated with elevated risks around economics, around access to health care, and around health behaviors, what we call social determinants of health. And we believe that all those things conspire in a variety of different ways for different women. But in a variety of different ways to lead to these terrible outcomes.
Well, Dr. Kelly, I know your work has been with disadvantaged women getting early and ongoing prenatal care and natal care. Is this something that you recognize as being an issue when it comes to a woman's health in contributing to the infant mortality numbers here?
The prenatal care and the access to prenatal care is much more difficult for women in the low socioeconomic group, which is who we're targeting. But we're not sure about the medical, completely sure about all the medical benefits of prenatal care for all populations. But in the select populations that are at higher risk for infant death or for adverse prenatal outcomes, we use prenatal care for two main purposes. One is to address the medical problems. The big ones that we're concerned about are prior history of preterm birth and high blood pressure or hypertension in pregnancy, as well as diabetes or prior adverse outcome, a fetal death or an infant death. But we also use access to care to allow us to address the social issues that a woman brings with her to the pregnancy. So really, we believe it's twofold. The access to care allows for the medical aspects of it, but also for us to address the social aspects. Transportation, willingness to comply with care, access to a hospital, receiving messages about different topics that may assist in decreasing adverse or what we would call bad outcomes.
Well, I was, in looking at the work that you've been doing, noticed in addressing some of these issues, you have these prenatal centers that are open, that is day of service, so a lot of these challenged women don't necessarily have to make an appointment and keep an appointment. It's easier for them when they have the opportunity to show up and be able to get the care they need.
Correct. One of the programs that together UC Health and Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, primarily through the Perinatal Institute and the Anderson Center, did together was devise a what we would call a bundle, a grouping of things that we think may in our work have an initial higher impact. And one is, as Jim was saying, addressing the social determinants of health. Do women have access to transportation, childcare, insurance? Do they have fears around accessing the medical system? So we felt that we made a hypothesis that if we allowed women to access care on their time, when they're ready and able, that they would feel more free to access care. And so we worked together with using the Cincinnati Health Department and the Center for Women's Health at University of Cincinnati Medical Center with the quality improvement expertise at the Perinatal Institute and the Anderson Center through a children's strategic plan to decrease infant mortality, and found that we were actually able to change the program and change the mindset of the healthcare system in this small area, addressing, putting the patient at the center and instead of the healthcare system needs at the center.
Mark, what we know is that no woman, rich or poor, wants their baby to die. And so we have that going for us. And that means that our challenge is to figure out what the barriers are that are getting in the way of women who are impoverished in our community to receiving the kinds of care they want, to having the kinds of prevention that they want. So to take as an example, obesity is a risk factor for preterm birth. And that's a simple one to go to judgment on. But when you start thinking about access to healthy food and how hard it is for a woman who lives in an impoverished neighborhood in Cincinnati to access that food, all of a sudden the picture gets much, much more complicated.
We're talking about infant mortality and the high rates here in Cincinnati and Hamilton County, almost double the national average. If you have something to contribute to the conversation, feel free to join us at 513-419-7155. Now, I know in some of the research I was doing for this discussion that the premature births mostly happen among younger mothers, teens, and one of the warning things for avoiding infant mortality, you say, is don't get pregnant as a teenager. And you know how teenagers are. How do you reach this particular audience and impress upon them the importance about getting proper care?
Well, Mark, actually, I've got some good news for you about that. There's the teen birth rate's actually been going down dramatically nationally and in our region for the last 10 years. And one of the important things that we've learned is actually for preterm birth, that while we used to believe that being a teenager was a very, very significant risk factor, it may not be. Hmm. And it actually, older women, and Elizabeth can comment more on this, but women who are what we call advanced maternal age, and I won't tell you exactly what this is because I don't want to insult any women who are listening, but is probably an even more significant risk factor. So it's just one reflection of how complex this is and how preconceived notions can enter into how we think about it and want to intervene.
Well, I wanted to ask about premature birth because that is, as you've said, Ryan, the primary cause of infant mortality. And a lot of premature birth I perceive as being caused by environmental factors, whether it's socioeconomic or otherwise. You know, how much of an effect does that have when it comes to preterm?
So the interesting thing is that we know that these things have an effect on rates of prematurity and the risk of having a preterm birth. But actually, one of the pervasive ongoing mysteries of medicine is why pregnancy lasts as long as it does. So since we don't know why a human pregnancy is supposed to last 9 months, it actually makes it difficult to understand why it sometimes lasts for a shorter period of time. So what we're left with is a variety of identifying a variety of different risk factors that are associated with prematurity but may actually not be direct causes of prematurity. And we think that it's combinations of risk factors a given woman at a certain time probably conspire to cause that baby to be born early. But it's an area of active research in the United States, and actually in Cincinnati, we were just awarded a major grant from the March of Dimes to fund a center for the study of preterm birth to understand some of those causes at a more basic level. I think our goal always is to take what we learn and translate that to the community and to providers so that we can be most effective. And really the driving force behind Cradle Cincinnati is doing that, because we've discovered that one of the challenges around this, and you alluded to it before, is that there's a certain amount of knowledge, but getting that knowledge to where it belongs is an ongoing challenge because it's housed in so many different isolated areas: obstetrics, neonatology on the medical side, different parts of the community as well. And we need to get together in order to share that knowledge effectively in order to address this.
Mark, one of the things we've been doing, and we launched in June of last year, and of course the question everyone has is why? Why are babies dying? What's the problem? So we've looked closely at the data, and we've identified three things, and we call these the three S's. So spacing, smoking, and sleep. And the first two, spacing and smoking, are very associated with preterm birth. So when we talk about spacing, this was new to me when I started this job. I'd never heard this before. But ideally, a woman would have 18 months between a delivery and her next pregnancy beginning. And that's where the outcomes begin to level off and be ideal. And we know that getting closer to that 18-month mark. So when you start to look at births that are spaced pregnancies that are spaced 3 months apart or 4 months apart, we have really bad outcomes associated with those. Smoking, everyone knows smoking is bad during pregnancy. So the challenge there is helping women to quit smoking. And we like to start with the simple 1-800-QUIT-NOW phone number, which is run by the Ohio Department of Health. And it's much more than a single phone call. It kind of walks women through a process. You can actually get paid to go through that program if you're pregnant. And then sleep, which is the final S. And that's, we spoke about it before, but we have 16 to 18 babies die every year just from unsafe sleeping conditions. And what safe sleep looks like is babies sleeping alone on their back and in a crib. So every time a baby goes to sleep, it's important that they're asleep alone on their back and in a crib.
Talking about infant mortality on Cincinnati Edition, 513-419-7100. Now, what kind of numbers are you talking about, or statistics are you talking about on a baby's chance of survival when it comes to preterm delivery? I would guess the later they can stay in term, the
Absolutely.
Better their chances. Directly proportional.
Now, I'll let Jim speak specifically to this, but what we know is we see a lot of babies born here at a very, very early term. So 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and We see babies that are born at 22, 23 weeks, even 20 weeks. And those babies don't really have a chance to survive. And that's about a third of our infant deaths every year are from those babies that are born that very early. And then there's a delineation that I'll let Jim go into at about 32 weeks that seems to matter as well.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. As the closer a baby gets the term, the more likely they are to survive. And the ironic thing about this infant mortality problem and the increase in infant mortality is that it's occurred at the same time that we've made great progress in the neonatal intensive care unit, saving the lives of smaller and smaller and tinier babies. So despite that progress, as Ryan points out, extremely preterm infants have a high risk of dying. And if you take an example of a baby born 15 weeks early, at 25 weeks gestation, that baby has about a 50 to 60% survival chance. And one of the important concepts here is that we'd much rather prevent prematurity or shift that preterm delivery from 25 weeks to 28 or 30 weeks, where the survival is well in excess of 90 to 95%.
And again, that's where women's health becomes so important. So this issue grabs a lot of people because it's cute babies, and everybody wants to talk about cute babies. And it gets trickier when we start talking about women's health. And that's really what we need to be focused on for many, many of these deaths.
Well, of course, when you talk about infant mortality, sudden infant death syndrome enters the picture. It's always seems to be part of the discussion. Please explain what SIDS is. For those who may have an idea but not certain about that.
I'm going to kick it over to Elizabeth, but I'll say that's generally when we're talking about unsafe sleep and SIDS, those can be translated into pretty similar things. There are sometimes truly unknown deaths, but most of our SIDS deaths locally had an unsafe sleep condition with them. And Elizabeth, I know you've experienced that with women in the community.
So the overarching term is sudden unexpected infant death. And under that will be two classifications. One is unsafe sleep, and the other is what we call sudden infant death syndrome. The sudden infant death syndrome is when the baby is sleeping alone on their back in a safe sleep surface. So a crib or a bassinet, something that has a safe sleep surface, and we can talk about that later if we have time. Those babies die sleeping safely, and there's no other known reason why they die. Safe sleep are all related to the baby not sleeping alone. Co-sleeping, or people accidentally rolling over on their infant, is the leading cause of sudden unexpected infant death in Hamilton County. And we see all these deaths as preventable. We have many, many sad stories of women and many women that I care for and see back in my offices that will say, it was one time. Or the baby was sleeping on the couch with my husband or the father of the baby or a relative, and we thought it would be okay this one time. These children are primarily full-term, very healthy children that have lived 2, 3, or 4 months. And so this is a very devastating thing, of course, for the family and our community, and does contribute to the high rate of infant death in our community.
This is a hot button issue, and I know with some of the young mothers I've been encountering lately, co-sleeping is something they, it allows me to take better care of the baby, but there's a lot of evidence that shows that it is very dangerous. And you have people on both sides of the issue. It seems that that's another, difficult aspect of fighting infant mortality, is trying to overcome these perceptions. I mean, how do you do that, and how do you argue with someone who is, trying to promote co-sleeping when it's...
So there are absolutely scores of families in town who have co-slept with their babies and not had an incident. And that's often sort of an objection we hear to this. But you only have to talk to one family who co-slept with an infant and rolled over, woke up, and found their baby not alive anymore for it to really convince you. We have a couple families who sort of advocate for us on this front, and the stories are just so heartbreaking that many of these families, weren't necessarily doing anything obviously wrong, these sleeping conditions. And so it's a tricky one. And like a lot of public health issues, it's easy to show a lot of versions of things where things have gone all right, and this went all right, but still we have 17, 18 babies die every year just from this.
I'll kick it back to you, Dr. Kelly, to ask about, you had mentioned the safer sleeping surfaces. Explain what you meant by that and what advice parents should take when it comes to making sure that their infant is in a safe sleeping environment.
So we want the child to be sleeping on a firm mattress. And there are specifically designed mattresses that fit that category. They fit into a pack and play. They fit into a crib or a bassinet. We want a fitted sheet that's tightly around the safe sleep surface and nothing else in the crib or bassinet or pack and play, whichever safe sleep surface they have. So let's contrast what an unsafe sleep surface may be, a waterbed or a couch or a cushion, where that surface can wrap around the child. Even if they are sleeping on their back, it can wrap around their mouth, or they could, it's an unstable environment for them. So even though the child may not be able to turn yet on their own, they may be turned to their side and then pushed over by those unsafe sleep surfaces. We also don't want anything in the bed with the child. We're talking about not sleeping with another person, but also not sleeping with stuffed animals, so that unfortunately may fall over into the child and allow them to not breathe, so they suffocate by having stuffed animals fall on to them. And we have had that happen in our community.
Now, what are the other causes of SIDS? You mentioned SIDS and the difference between SIDS and unexplained,
yes. Sudden and unexpected infant death is the broad category, and SIDS falls under that. So SIDS, the infant is sleeping alone on their back in a crib. They'd have an autopsy, and they don't show any, we don't have any known reason why that may happen.
Yeah, maybe I can add a few things. So first of all, just to emphasize something that Ryan pointed out, that 18 deaths in our community, 3 times the national average, which is just incredible. And the vast majority of those deaths are due to unsafe sleep circumstances. The other causes, as Elizabeth points out, are really much more elusive. There are very, very rare inborn errors of metabolism and other genetic defects that can lead to this. They border on the exotic and, of course, are less easy to identify and so on. So I think the most important thing that we would want to emphasize is that the unsafe sleep prevention would nearly eliminate all of the deaths that we're seeing, and the excess deaths for sure in our region.
Dr. Jim Greenberg, who is here with Dr. Elizabeth Kelly and Ryan Adcock, talking about the high infant mortality rate here in our community. You can join the discussion at 513-419-7100. Barb from Northside is on the phone to ask about an aspect of this. Good afternoon, Barb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering what the speakers think about the fact that with spacing, as you mentioned, and a lot of these women are younger, access to information about using birth control, particularly birth control, but also would decrease sexually transmitted infections, which, of course, were highest in the nation, and we have an epidemic on syphilis going on right now, and we have up to 6 babies born a year with syphilis. So this is really all connected to me, too, with regards to just access to good reproductive health and birth control usage. So I'm wondering what the commentary on that is. And I don't think I've heard you speak of the demographic yet. Are the children that we're having this infant, or the infant mortality rate, is it predominantly African American? Thanks. I'll go off the air to take your answers. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Barb. I appreciate that. And yes, we didn't discuss. I talked a little bit about the geographic and racial and economic disparities, and African Americans are at a higher risk.
African American families are about twice as likely to experience an infant death in Cincinnati and Hamilton County. That gap is closing a little bit, which is great news, but obviously twice as likely is still completely unacceptable. So that's an answer to her demographic question. Around spacing and access to birth control, so we have some limited survey data from the CDC where we asked women in Hamilton County why they're not using birth control in cases where they're not. and a surprisingly small amount are saying that they don't have access to it. A larger amount are saying things like, my partner didn't want to use it, are saying things like, I thought I couldn't get pregnant at that time. So there are some more basic questions that need to be answered here. Access, obviously, we're big fans of, but there are also some education, some community discussions that need to take place. And Elizabeth has a lot of experience in this area, so I'll let her speak to it as well.
Barb, thanks for your very thoughtful question. I think both of those points are really important. And access to birth control and having contraception that women feel is acceptable to them, understanding how to use it, feeling that the side effects that may exist are not going to be a problem for them is all extremely vital. The Cincinnati Health Department has a Title X grant called the Reproductive Health and Wellness Grant that the Health Commissioner, Dr. Massaro, was instrumental in obtaining for our city and county residents. It's run by Dr. Jennifer Mooney and allows access, open access to all types of contraception through the Cincinnati Health Department. But absolutely, contraception education, understanding contraception is vital for our work, and we look forward through the efforts of Cradle Cincinnati and our collaboration in the community with input from the Center for Closing the Health Gap for understanding what women perceive to be their barriers to using contraception. But like all these efforts, we really feel like the most important cornerstone is educating our community about what we believe is the right things that they can do to decrease their child from having a death or a preterm birth, and spacing and then the natural link to contraception is one of them.
Mark, more than half of our local pregnancies are unintended, and so that's one of the numbers we'd really like to see go down through this work. And that's it's a tough conversation, and it's a broad conversation, but it's one that we need to have.
Coming in digitally, Chris wanted to know, is breastfeeding a part of this, and should babies sleep in a crib in the parents' room? Is that safer? And I believe that such is the case, and that breastfeeding does, longer-term breastfeeding is helpful.
We encourage that babies sleep very close to their parents, however close parents are comfortable, just in a separate sleeping area. So in a crib right next to the bed is absolutely fine. And I'll let Jim speak to this, but breastfeeding does have all sorts of wonderful effects on infant health.
Sure. Breastfeeding is absolutely part of the equation here. And certainly a core concept of Cradle Cincinnati is to encourage moms to breastfeed. Is it the sole answer? Probably not, unfortunately. But there's so many benefits, both in terms of beyond simply reducing infant mortality or risk of death, but improved health and outcomes, that it's of profound importance.
Michelle from Lebanon's on the phone. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition, Michelle.
Hi, I was wondering if there were any programs to meet these women in their homes to send primary care providers out to educate these women to see where these babies are sleeping and the nutrition that these women are getting, especially by nurses and certified nurse midwives.
Thank you. Good question, Michelle. And I was going to ask, we've been talking about, you know, the more depressing side, but what is being done? I mean, what kind of programs are in place that are helpful for mothers and those at risk?
Sure. So I'll start, Mark. I think one very compelling program that we know has a positive effect on this problem in Cincinnati is Every Child Succeeds and the home visitation program that they lead. It's extraordinarily effective. There's solid data to support that. Home visitors who are educated, trained, and can collect data on their visits, visit these moms in their homes and provide really effective information. And the challenge is that there aren't enough of them, and we'd like to see more. There are other types of interventions that we're looking at, including community health workers, and I think I'll have Ryan or Elizabeth talk a little bit about that, but some very exciting interventions there we think are going to really make a difference.
The additional, like Jim said, besides the Every Child Succeeds program, the Cincinnati Health Department has a longstanding, very well-structured and very active nurse visiting program. They will visit patients during or women during their pregnancy, as well as routinely afterwards. We also have a regional hub for community health workers led by Judith Warren and Healthcare Access Now, which is a group of community health workers. So community workers, women ideally from the community, know the community, who follow the patient, the woman, during her pregnancy and address barriers to care and provide structured education for them as well. So we feel that each one of these home visitation, care coordination programs offer a very important intervention for the woman and are uniquely fit, are uniquely set to fit for the individual. Each one of these, a woman will choose to have each one of these different programs depending on her needs and her availability to uptake what the program offers.
Well, and this question gives us a chance to talk about sort of the core of our work. Cradle Cincinnati was founded primarily as a partnership. We're here for collaboration. We're here to say that, hey, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people working on this issue in our region. And the important thing to remember is that the only way we're going to move this needle is by all working together. And there is no one agency that can get all the credit for fixing this. There's no one agency to blame for the problem. And so when Todd Portune, who's a county commissioner, and Wendell Young, who's a city council member, came together to start this effort, their thinking was all of these individuals need to work together to solve this.
Now, you have an event coming up on February 18th. We're about out of time, but I wanted to find out and let you share that.
We absolutely do. So we're reaching out to the entire community. We would love your ideas. We are formulating our strategic plan right now and would love input from everyone. So we're going to be meeting from 10 a.m. to noon at the Community Action Agency on Tuesday, February 18th. That will be a meeting that is co-chaired by County Commissioner Todd Portune and City Council Member Wendell Young. And it's an open invitation to the public. We would ask that you RSVP by emailing us at info@cradlecincinnati.org.
We'll have that information on our website. And I'm sorry we're out of time. I know this is a very daunting task, but we appreciate your work in trying to move that needle as fast as we can. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
for the
having us.
Dr. Elizabeth Kelly, Director of Maternal and Infant Health at Cincinnati Health Department and Associate Professor of Clinical Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. Dr. James Greenberg, Co-Director of the Perinatal Institute and Professor, UC Department of Pediatrics. And the Executive Director of Cradle Cincinnati, Ryan Adcock. You can learn more about Cradle Cincinnati and the work they're doing. Cradle Cincinnati, every baby, every day. You'll find a link at our website, wvxu.org. Cincinnati's Irish heritage on display when Cincinnati Edition continues in a moment on 91.7 WVXU.